On this show, I'm talking with entrepreneur Chris Beck about the challenges and rewards of starting a business in Japan and what he thinks it's going to take to move Japan into the digital world. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And how are you doing in your part of the world this week? Here in Japan, there's been some rather interesting developments. A Japanese business lobby has recently suggested to the Japanese government that they should mandate companies switch from a five-day work week to a four-day work week to reduce the number of people in the office. And they cite this study that was done, this experiment that was done by Microsoft a few years ago, where Microsoft in Japan did exactly that. They reduced their work week to a four-day work week, and they saw a 40% boost in worker productivity. And what's interesting is the response from the Japanese public at the time was quite negative towards that. They didn't like that idea of working 4 days instead of five at all. And I think I might have figured out why. Let me read this quote from NPR about what Microsoft did. So this is from NPR. Let me read what it says. Because of the shorter work week, the company also put its meetings on a diet. The standard duration for a meeting was slashed from 60 minutes to 30 minutes, an approach that was adopted for nearly half of all meetings in the company. In a related cut, standard attendance at those meetings was capped at 5 employees. Now, if you know anything about Japanese salarymen, reducing the time of a meeting is sacrilege. Oh my Buddha, you can't do that. Do you remember, if you listened to the show I did with Michael Howard a couple episodes ago, he talked about his life in a Japanese company. And one of the things he talked about was how in a Japanese company, if you schedule a meeting for 60 minutes and you finish in 40 minutes, you sit around for the full 60 minutes, because heaven forbid you leave that meeting room early. If it's scheduled for 60 minutes, it's got to go to 60 minutes. The other thing that Japanese people or Japanese companies love to do when it comes to meetings is have a lot of people in the meetings, whether they need to be there or not. And you know what? Honestly, you go into some of these meetings and you're going to see a couple old guys who have no clue what's going on, four or five executives who actually do most of the talking, and two or three junior employees, usually women, who are just sitting there taking notes or handing out tea or something like that. Like, there's just no need for so many people in these meetings. I've been in meetings where just, I think, what does that mean? That one meeting was like, there was like maybe like 10? No, eight to 10 people on like one side, and like, I don't know, five or six on our side. No, not even that many, like maybe four or five on our side. But during the whole meeting, only one person from their team was talking to one person on our team. Like, those two people were the only people that were talking and only had any need to talk during that whole meeting, a whole hour long meeting. Everyone else had nothing to contribute because there's just no point in them being there. But because it's Japan, you gotta, like, you know, show the face, and so you have to be there. So Microsoft suggesting that they reduce meeting times to only 30 minutes and cap the attendance to just 5 employees. Oh my God, I can understand why all these salarymen like just hated that idea. You know what the funny thing is I actually think a lot of Japanese salarymen, they kind of like to be salarymen because, yeah, their job is you know, garbage and their boss is an idiot and they have no real excitement in their career and all that, but I think they like the perks of being a Japanese salaryman, which is, you know, a lack of accountability at work, so they can just kind of coast along at work, and they can't, if they're a full-time employee, they can't get fired anyway, so they don't have to do a lot of effort at work. There's a seniority-based promotion system, so basically, if they can tough it out, eventually they'll reach the management level, and then they have even less work to do because all their underlings will do all the work for them. And then during that whole time, they get to go out drinking after work every day with their coworkers and put it on the company tab. So, like, and think of the alternative to that. You reduce it to 4 weeks or 4 days a week. The alternative is they go home. They got to deal with their wife, their kids, their family responsibility. Like, they don't want to do all that. They just love this kind of, like, almost like a, what do you call, not a party atmosphere, but like a kind of like club style atmosphere that they can have with their coworkers and all that without a lot of responsibility. So I'm not surprised that a lot of them are against any kind of reduction in the work length and the amount of time that they have to spend in the office. But the thing is, this whole COVID situation has forced many of these Japanese companies to kind of reevaluate their current working conditions because, you know, suddenly when the government's saying like everybody has to stay home, but they have this situation where everyone has to come to the office just to stamp a piece of paper with their hunko, then they're all like, what do we do now? You know, like you got this kind of old world bumping heads with this new current situation. And for those of you who don't know, a hunko is like a stamp. They don't really sign documents in Japan. You stamp it with a stamp. So there's all these salarymen who have to go to the office just to stamp paper because they can't do it digitally. So there's some talk about like how to try to make that kind of more digital. Another thing that came up recently, which was kind of funny, is the fact that doctors are complaining that they have to fill out all their medical reports by hand, for each patient by hand, and fax it to the Ministry of Health. Like, what? You couldn't do that on a computer and just like email it to someone or just have like some kind of cloud database where it's like automatically updated? No, they gotta like write everything out by hand and then walk over to the fax machine and individually fax all these documents to the Ministry of Health. Like, it's just insane. And what's interesting is now government or like doctors and like even some celebrities are starting to voice discontent about this system. And this is actually incredibly rare for anyone in Japan to say anything is bad about, especially about a bigger organization. Because remember, I've talked about like the hierarchy of Japanese culture is an upside down triangle. The individual person at the bottom, the company's at the top. So rarely do you ever talk bad about the next level above you. And especially celebrities in Japan are tightly controlled by their management company. And so they'll never say anything bad or anything political or anything like that. They're all just very, very, very vanilla, and they don't want to risk any kind of damage to their reputation. And the management companies make sure of this a lot. Like, they really are restrictive of what they can say. But recently, a few celebrities actually spoken out about government policies. And so all of Japan is like just buzzing away on Twitter going, oh my God, what's going on? But it'll be interesting to see how this situation kind of plays out for Japan, because it's not a country that's accustomed to making some quick changes, but this, you know, given the current climate, they may be forced to make some changes. And I think they may be forced to adopt modern digital technologies and leave kind of the old analog world behind, which is something Japan needed to do anyways. But I think now they kind of have like a more serious reason as to why they need to kind of take a serious look at kind of internet technologies and whatnot. And the person who's going to help them do all that is my buddy Chris Beck. So I've known Chris for a long time. We actually both came to Japan around the same time, and he originally was working for a small startup. And a few years ago, he left the startup and started his own tech company, which actually surprised me because I didn't think that Chris had a background in tech. In fact, I was really surprised when I found out what his real reason was for coming to Japan. What was your original reason for coming to Japan? You don't strike me as like an anime geek or anything like that, which is like what most of the people come here.
But, you know, to be honest, that's exactly what I was.
Were you really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I absolutely was. I was a huge otaku, man.
Were you really? I didn't know
absolutely
that.
Massive. I'm from LA. I was hitting up Anime Expo every year, you know, doing the cosplaying. So I was definitely very much into that scene when I was growing up.
So Chris is the CEO of InCloud, and on their website it says InCloud offers industry-leading consulting and development services for cloud and IoT products. And if you don't understand what that means, don't worry, because no one else in Japan does either. But to be honest, even I don't understand what it means.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, it's not just Japan that doesn't know what the hell I do. I think it's most of my friends back home. So I think most people don't know what the hell I do. But, you know, simply put, my company does a lot of software development. So, you know, basically making sure if you click something on your website that it works, that it does what it's supposed to do. And when it comes to IoT, it's basically saying, if you say, hey, Alexa, turn my light on, making sure that Alexa turns your light on. And things like that.
Okay, so break it down even more simple than that. If I am, if I'm running a noodle shop and I mm-hmm. want a website, mm-hmm. and I come to you, mm-hmm. you're not building the website, right?
No, so we don't, I guess, specialize in just making a website for someone, right? A landing page, making it pretty and things like that. We specialize in making web applications. So right. basically...
So if I wanted an ordering system, for example, like if I exactly. wanted customers to be able to order online and then it comes to the kitchen and then gets sent exactly. out...
That's the exact, like, perfect example. And also, not even just that. Let's say it's the ordering system plus... for example, you want to connect it to an IoT system where it says, hey, this is your next order that's coming up. Or on the outside, it pushes it to somebody's phone saying, hey, you're next in line for your reservation, for example. All of those different things all combined together. That's kind of like what we do.
But you didn't actually start this business when you came to Japan, right? Like you're from the States. You didn't go, hey, I'm going to get into the IoT business. Let me go to Japan. What was your original reason for coming to Japan?
Yeah. So actually, I don't have a tech background whatsoever. I graduated from university with a degree in finance. But that was during the Lehman shock. So obviously I couldn't find a job in finance. But then I came to Japan as a language student, studied Japanese for a year and a half, and then immediately got started into the startup industry here, which was not even in tech. So my first experience with technology was actually working at my previous startup, having to kind of do development work there. They wanted to kind of develop an in-house solution software for doing processing some things to make things easier automation wise. And that was kind of like my first experience with, okay, how do I manage software development? I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I don't know what is going on. How do I manage this? And then, I mean, that was a huge disaster because obviously it was my first time doing anything in technology. That was a huge disaster, but that was kind of like the beginning parts of me going like, oh, what the heck? You could actually pay someone. You don't have to be a developer. You don't have to program anything yourself. You could just manage it and then still get a good product out of it. And that kind of got the wheels turning. And you know, that was kind of like my first experience in technology and, you know, getting into the IT business.
What was your original reason for coming to Japan?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So you don't strike me as like an anime geek or anything like that, which is like what most of the people come here.
But, you know, to be honest, that's exactly what I was.
Were you really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I absolutely was. I was a huge otaku, man.
Were you really? I didn't know
absolutely
that.
Massive. I'm from LA. I was hitting up Anime Expo every year, you know, doing the cosplaying. So I was definitely very much into that scene when I was growing up.
Ah, okay, I got it. Okay, your cool points dropped a couple points there because I thought, well, yeah.
Hey, man, I was a huge gamer too. Instead of going out partying in college, sometimes I would just, you know, I had to raid on WoW. You know, I had to do it
collect
for the
coins horde. And level up.
Exactly.
Oh, that's funny.
But to be honest, that part of my life is well and truly behind me.
So you came to, obviously there's no jobs in the States, the economy went in the crapper, and so you come to Japan, you start working at this startup kind of as the IT guy with no IT background. Is that what it happened?
Well, no, I mean, it wasn't just the IT guy. I mean, I was doing something, you know, all around operations, everything that was operations fell into my plate, and IT was just one of those extra things that it was required of me for operations. And, you know, that's kind of something that I just had to take care of alongside with everything else, like HR, like, you know, everything.
How long were you at the startup for?
I was there for about 6.5 years.
Well, that's a long time. And so I'm curious then is like during that time, kind of, you're almost like running your own business at that point, right? But you didn't have any, you know, previous experience running your own business before, did you?
No, I did not.
So what did you kind of learn about yourself or running a business during that time?
So actually being able to join someone else's startup that already had the business running is a very different look than basically taking it from zero to one, right? So taking it from 0 to 1 is very, very different than taking it from 1 to 10, right? The scaling and the growth part is very different than the actual starting up part. And so the experience that I got at the previous startup was just, you know, joining and helping it grow. And I think I gained a lot of valuable experience, for example, hiring, managing people, how to manage people correctly, what motivates people. And I guess the greatest thing that I learned from that particular experience was the fact that, you know, people really make your business work. And people are pretty much a business's greatest asset. And so you really need to make sure that they are performing to their best, and your job as a manager is making sure that they have the tools necessary to succeed.
Yeah, it's interesting what you said there about like starting your own business or like running someone else's. It really is a huge mental step, isn't it? From when you're like running, you could be CEO of someone else's company versus being like the founder of your own. And it's a completely different ball game mentally.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is, because I was very naive, I think, when I first started my own company, was the fact that I was kind of riding a high, you know, I was tooting my own horn a little bit. I was like, yo, I'm kind of the shit. I helped this other company do really, really well. And then what I actually experienced was something totally different. It was like, oh my God, I have to fill out all this paperwork that I have no idea what the hell I'm doing. First of all, why the fuck do I have to do this? Or, you know, all of these different things that I didn't know came with entrepreneurship. For, I guess one of the biggest ones was the crippling loneliness, right? It's like you're used to being around people 24/7, having people hound you for things, and then going to complete silence and just you and your thoughts.
Also, did you feel kind of an additional sense of responsibility? Because, you know, when you're working for another company, no matter how high up you are in that company, I think you always kind of feel a little bit not complacent, but a little bit of security, because it's not really your deal, right? Like you always kind of feel like, well, if this company doesn't work out, I can just go get another job. But when it's your business, it's your name on that bottom line, it adds a lot more responsibility to kind of how you deal with things. Did you find that?
Yeah. But at the same time, I think you, as an entrepreneur, you really need to compartmentalize that. Because if you're always too worried about failure, or, you know, this is your name's on the line and things like that, it really prevents you from taking necessary risks. And I think you really need to kind of separate yourself out of that mode and just be like, this is a business. It doesn't matter whose business it is, and I just need to run the shit out of it. Like, right. This is my jam, and I need to own it.
So you, after, you know, 6 or so years at this startup, what made you kind of decide to transition into your own business?
So actually, it was when I decided to leave. I didn't expect to be starting my own business. I kind of took a sabbatical, or I took some time off, traveled Southeast Asia, did all this fun stuff. And then when I came back to Japan, I was actually looking for a job. But then, you know, because I was in a position of you know, when I left my previous startup, I was COO. And when I left that, I was kind of like, okay, what job can kind of give me the freedom to make my decisions, be a manager and all of these things in Japan? And as I was looking for those types of jobs in Japan, they were pretty much non-existent. And so at the time I was like, okay, Japan's not going to work out for me. I need to go back home if I want to have like my perfect job or a perfect situation, because Japan, I guess, wasn't working out or wasn't the ideal situation for me at the time. But then my partner approached me and said, hey, look, I think we should do an IT business because we are primed for it. Japan really needs help in IT development, things like that. Let's give it a go. Right. And I was like, all right. I mean, I don't have anything better to do. Let's just try it out for a year or two. And if it doesn't work out, then I'll go back to the States. And all right, let's just go.
Well, you said before you don't have a background in IT, right?
I do not.
So when your partner came to you, kind of what were your initial thoughts? Were you like, IT? Is there something else we could do?
Yeah, but actually, my partner is a genius engineer, so I guess that's one thing that I was very fortunate to have with me. But yeah, it was really a lot of just faith, you know, his faith and my faith in myself and my confidence to be able to pick up what I needed to pick up, learn what I need to learn, and do what I do best, right, which is selling.
Actually, you know what, to be honest, I was actually surprised when I saw that you started this business, because I remember when we talked before, you were thinking about going back to the States. Mm-hmm. And then I remember seeing kind of it pop up on Facebook or whatever. I was like, InCloud. Like, I was like, wow, I didn't know Chris had a tech background. Like, what a techie business to start.
Yeah.
I was like, what? What happened there? Especially in Japan, too. I was like, what? Like, he doesn't have a tech background. He's starting a tech company in Japan. Like, what the hell? So I was actually quite surprised. But I'm very happy to see that the video that you posted recently saying that you guys have celebrated your 2-year anniversary and hopefully things are going well. What were some of the kind of initial challenges that you guys had to overcome to get to this point?
I mean, it's I guess the easiest thing to say is pretty much any business that's starting up in Japan, right? It's there's a lot of bureaucracy. Everything moves at a glacial pace, especially if you're dealing with clients in Japan. You know, our company right now is mainly B2B. So we don't have a product that consumers can easily buy and purchase and use, which we actually are going to be launching. We are going to be launching very soon our own you know, platform or product for BTC. But for the most part, we've been dealing with mainly businesses, and man, they take ages for like an approval process. And even if you make things perfectly, or not even just it has to be perfect when you deliver a product to them, and the amount of support that they require afterwards and so on and so forth. So it has been very enlightening, to say the least.
I'm curious, actually, because like, how is your Japanese? Like, obviously, you went to Japanese language school here. Would you say you're at business level Japanese?
I think it's gotten way better in the past 2 years. But when I first started, it was awful. Because I, even though I went to Japanese language school, the 6.5 years that I spent at the previous startup was, I was speaking completely in English. So I was basically starting my company from very, very little business level Japanese. My conversational casual Japanese is no problem, but you know, business Japanese is its own beast.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I'm curious, actually, because I know from my experience dealing with Japanese companies here is like the sales process is very formal. And it's not so much like in the States where you can just ring someone up or connect with them on LinkedIn or whatever and say, hey, let's go grab a coffee and I'll, you know, show you what I'm doing. That doesn't really seem to exist as much here. It's a lot of formality and there's a lot of hesitation I've found from big Japanese companies and dealing with a startup. You know, you go to these meetings and they got like 20 of their people on one side of the table and you got like 2 on your side of the table. They're looking at you like, what, where's the rest of your team? So I'm curious as to how you kind of dealt with that in your early days.
So basically the solution to that problem is there's one of two ways that you can solve that, right? You're 100% right. Most corporates will never deal with a startup. And that's just the way they do business. It's too risky, right? If you think about it just strictly from a business standpoint, you do not want to do business with a company that could potentially run out of cash because their capital isn't high enough, even like in the middle of you dealing with them, for example, or a company that doesn't have a proven track record, so on and so forth, right? And especially in Japan, they don't like risk, right? So I mean, most anywhere else in the world is probably the same, but especially in Japan. So you really need to approach it in one of two ways. The first way is your network. It's just networking, right? It's if you know someone that knows someone who's part of there and that can vouch for you, you can get that meeting, right? Yeah, you can get the meeting where you can do your pitch to show them what you have and to show them that you're confident. And at that point, it's all about your sales skills, right? It's all about whether or not you can convince them that you are the real deal and that you can deliver a product that they're going to be happy with. That's one way, right? And the second way is if you can provide a solution that they don't have, right? If you have a product that is not on the market, or if you have a solution that they really need that they don't have access to so far, or it's, you know, those types of things. Like if you, for example, approach a company and, you know, they're struggling with, you know, building a website, for example, right? Like if you go on online and they have a really, really bad website, if you approach them and say, hey, look, we have a portfolio of my previous work. I did all of these great websites. I can make your website too. You know, that's a really good ask.
Yeah, I think it's in Japan too. It's hard to get started, but once you kind of get started and your name gets out there, it's kind of easier to get the ball rolling, so to speak, because no Japanese company wants to be your first client. They want to see that you've got, you know, five other clients, and then they're more likely to hop on board. And actually, the funny thing that I found when I was working at Gaijin Pod is a lot of times, like if we pitch like company A, company, like their competitor would contact us directly and say, we want you to do for us what you did for company A.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one way of seeing it. And it's, I guess it's not just them knowing that you've worked with them, but actually the experience that you gain from working with a Japanese company initially, it will teach you how to deal with the subsequent clients, right? You know how to send that email. You know how to do that meeting. You know how to send that follow-up. You know exactly what pitch deck to use to convince them that you are the real deal.
I'm curious, like, what were the first few meetings like in the early days? Because you're pitching in Japanese, right? Were you like nervous as hell, or like what? Were you super confident, or what was the deal?
No, absolutely not, man. Absolutely not. So it's definitely nerve wracking. You just gotta do it. And I think, you know, it's the same thing with any person that's thinking about entrepreneurship. It's just that you're scared as hell. You don't know what the hell you're doing. But you just have to do it, and you have to treat it as a learning experience. Like you need to take the L in order to eventually get that W. Yeah. So you can't let those failures, or the fact that you don't think you're good enough, or the fact that, you know, you don't think you have the skills necessary in order to make that. You just need to have that confidence, I guess, to make sure that you take everything as a learning experience. I'm not saying you need to have the confidence to make sure that you know that you can succeed, but you need to be confident that you can take that L and then learn from it. I think that's the biggest thing that if you are trying to be an entrepreneur anywhere, not just in Japan, it's a very valuable, or like an essential mindset to have.
Yeah, that's a really key point, because, and it's easier said than done, you know, because it's very easy to beat yourself up if you don't get a client or something doesn't go right. And then it's easy to kind of go down that rabbit hole of thinking, I shouldn't have tried, or it's never going to work, or, you know, all these other people who said it when we were right. But it's a key mindset to develop, to kind of like stop and think, okay, well, that sucked. That didn't go well. How could I take that to improve and do better the next time? It's a tricky thing to do in the beginning, but I think it's a skill set that you kind of develop more and more as you go along. Then eventually you get to the point where you're just like, I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm just doing my own thing now.
Right. I mean, it's definitely a mindset that you need to have, right? You need to be okay with the probability or the possibility that this is not going to go well, right? And it's always going to be lingering there. But you need to know that, you know, if you are learning from every mistake, you're not, and you're preparing, you know, preparation is absolutely the key, right? You need to be able to prepare as long as it takes in order to get that successful pitch. Like, for example, in one of my pitches, I was like preparing for days before, right? I wrote out a 10-page script in Japanese, memorized everything, and came up with potential questions that they might ask me in regards to that, all in Japanese as well. And it's just that extensive preparation that you need to take in order to, you know, make sure that you cover all your bases as best as you can. And even after doing that, you know, they're going to throw curveballs to you, and you're not going to know what the hell you're doing. But then you need to also have contingency plans for that. Like if they ask you a certain question, you can be like, you don't want to freeze up and say, I don't know, but you're going to say, well, if you can provide me with the details, I can get back to you after I do some research and get back to you, you know, immediately.
Right.
Something like that, you know?
Yeah. I think a lot of it comes down to, like, do the Japanese companies think that they can trust you? Because if you're pitching them something, they're not going to make any decision based on your pitch at that moment. They're going to take it and analyze it to like months and months and months. So what they're initially trying to figure out is, can we trust you? Can you do business in the Japanese way? And are you going, if we do business with you, are you going to, is there any risk of you embarrassing our company?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there is definitely less, I guess if you look at it on like the risk reward scale, Western countries are definitely more, they will risk it to get the biscuit, right? They will risk more to get the potential reward. Whereas here it's less so. And that way you need to learn how to do the dance in making sure that you seem less risky.
That was Chris Beck, CEO of InCloud. And you know, I'm really glad to hear that Chris's business is doing so well, because the idea of a foreigner coming into Japan and starting a business and making a success out of it is actually quite rare. I know back in America and probably in Europe and other parts of Asia, that's not a rarity, right? You see someone coming in, start a business, that's like super common. But here in Japan, it's actually really rare. In fact, it's really rare for anyone, Japanese or foreigner, to start their own business, because Japanese work culture is not one of starting your own business. It's one of working for a big Japanese company. There's not a lot of entrepreneurialism within the Japanese work mindset. So there's a lot of barriers for even Japanese people to start their own business, and even more barriers if you're a foreigner. So I like actually hearing these stories of foreigners who come here and start the business, because I think it really, honestly, it contributes to Japan a lot. I really think that Japan needs more foreigners to come here and start businesses and actually like live and work here, not just come on some like corporate package and just sit in an office and then go back to wherever they came from, or not just come and, you know, teach English for years and years and years and not really do much, but they need to come and teach the Japanese how to be entrepreneurs and kind of push that mindset into Japanese society. So luckily for Chris, he's left his anime days behind. Just kidding. He's embraced the entrepreneurialism, and I know he's going to make a huge success out of his business. So if you're in Japan and you are in need of his IoT services, you can find them at incloud.jp. Unfortunately for me, I cannot think of any SaaS service that I need at this point, so I will not be using Chris's service, but you can bet as soon as I do, I will make sure to give him a ring. And that's it. That wraps up this episode of the Tokyo Podcast. I want to thank everybody for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode. I forgot the name of the podcast. I recorded 66 shows and I just totally blanked on the name of the podcast. How retarded is that?